For a start, when it came to Seattle, I mean, it was very hotly debated within our small group, and certainly it was a major issue within our web scene. It's not simply a question of cost. Cost is, of course, an important thing, but it's also a question where there are very distinct barriers which are not talked about. When we talk about globalization, when we talk of free trade, certainly there's free mobility of goods. There's no free mobility of people. And certainly when someone like me crosses a border, I'm looked at differently from the way other people are looked at. When we cross the same borders, when I go from one European country to another, most people walk past. When it comes to me, I'm stopped. It happens time and time again. It's not an accident. Yeah. When people stop me, they talk about certain kinds of passports. So there are all those definitions there. So it's both economic and political barriers which are there when this happens. So one has to find ways of working around it. What you were talking about at the school level is very interesting, because at the one level we felt, and we still do, that education is certainly a key method through which these changes can take place. But of course, education itself is charged. It's political in terms of who provides that education, whose thought process comes in, what is the content of that education system that comes across, who delivers it, who is it for, and all that has to be challenged. And those are difficult things to challenge, because there are textbook boards, there are curricula, there is an academia that operates at a certain level, which is difficult to overcome. So you've got to try subversive methods there as well. And certainly working with very disadvantaged people in rural areas was one way in which we were beginning to try and operate. The other thing that happens is, of course, within mainstream professions, there is no working class representation in a country like mine. The work that is done with working class people by NGOs or donor agencies is not really designed to help them overcome certain social barriers. It's addressed merely in terms of poverty. It's addressed in terms of, okay, this will help you eat so much, which is a relevant thing. But I think we forget that poorer people have as much demand for access to thought processes as they have a demand for material things. A person who is in jail might well have all his or her basic needs met, but is still deprived of very important freedoms. And I think when we're looking for opportunities for people who do not have that access, we must look across the border, not merely look at being able to feed a family. And certainly we have very clinically moved away from creating a system where people of working class backgrounds can challenge us and our thought processes. It's fine, you go from there, instead of making wicker baskets, you make rickshaws, and you earn a little bit more, but that's where you stay. You will never be allowed to come to a situation where you challenge the way I decide how you must feel. And that's a very established system that exists, so that has to be broken, which is why we've started working with minority groups in villages, with working class people, not merely helping them overcome the poverty trap, but also trying to find access for them so they can actually become part of the decision making process, which up till now hasn't happened. What you were talking about, or what I was talking about there, is a very interesting exercise, because one of the things we felt was important was to be self-sufficient. And to have that degree of independence, because Bangladesh has been through this aid syndrome for a long, long time, and I don't feel it has actually aided empowerment very much. So an alternative model had to be found, and self-sustainability had to be an important thing. What we tried to do there was to set up a model whereby children in schools would plant trees, which is a perfectly valid exercise in itself, because it would overcome deforestation and environmental problems. But it was done on a commercial basis, where the trees that were being planted would eventually give a return. But rather than wait 20 years for that tree to grow and then for it to be sold, we are actually selling it at present day discounted prices. On an economic index saying that a tree that'll be worth $150 in 20 years will be worth, say, $15 today. You can buy that tree today at an insured price of $15, but you pay it now. And those $15 goes towards the maintenance of the tree, payment for the people working on the tree, in this case the children, but also towards the school's education. So thereby, it is a self-contained unit where afforestation is actually helping education and empowerment. And it's a very interesting model that is beginning to work. And there are more trees in Bangladesh now.